Hello and welcome to Dvorak Horowitz Unplugged, an hour-long discussion of activity in the financial markets around the world, featuring columnist John C. Dvorak and money manager Andrew Horowitz. This conversation is casual and unrehearsed. Let's join John and Andrew now.
I'm John C. Dvorak.
And I'm Andrew Horowitz.
And here we are, the first podcast of 2022. And we started on January 18th. We only have two this month.
Yep. Well, we actually had those nice best ofs that ran for
a lot of people like those.
A lot of people like those. You know, they go back and they're like, oh my God, I can't believe you actually talked about that before it actually went on. And, you know, wow, we got to listen.
Oh, yeah, we're ahead of the game.
So, you know, it's kind of funny because I think what happens is a lot of the important information about markets, business, the world, economics gets kind of lost in the shuffle a lot of times with the media. You know, they're kind of covering the hot topic that happens that moment, that second. And if it's newsworthy or there's some big
name.
Yeah,
no, and then they just drop the ball.
Yeah, they totally dropped the ball.
Hey, did you, are you into making truffle butter?
Why do you ask that? That's funny.
I had a dream about you arguing with somebody making truffle butter.
I did make truffle butter recently. Yes, I did.
Oh, wait a minute. Wait a minute. If that wasn't a dream, somebody butt dialed me.
Oh, is that what happened? You know, now that you mentioned, I think I do remember that evening. I was cooking on the barbecue and I said, let's do put the truffle butter on it, right?
It was something like that.
Because I looked down and I saw Dvorak. I'm like, oh, why is he calling me? I don't know what's happening. Let me just move on.
So, oh, yeah. You did see the.
I did see it. Yeah. I did see it now that you mention it. Yeah. I was making truffle butter.
Yeah. You were with some other guy arguing about how to make it correctly or something like that. And I couldn't hear the voices distinctly. So I said to myself, let me think of all the people I know.
Right.
Who the hell would have me on their phone and that would be making truffle butter? And I just didn't take long.
Yeah. Well, yeah, I did have a nice evening. I made a compound butter that I usually make when I'm doing steaks. And then I had a picture actually I put up on Twitter. It's of the Chateaubriands, and I even put my brand in there. It was really cool.
Oh, you have a branding thing?
Yeah.
That you
yep.
put on the steaks and it puts a brand on there?
Sure.
Oh, man.
Come on, it's fun.
You're gone.
Yep, and while we're talking about food, I was going to save this for a little while, but this week coming up, the weekend on Sunday, I have been officially entered into a chili cook-off.
Oh.
So I took a lot
I've
of...
I've won two of those.
Have you really?
In my day, yeah.
Well, I'm looking forward to this week. I have some tricks up my sleeve. You know, there's a couple things. There's the favorite of the crowd, and then there's judges. So I heard some of the other guys, what they were making. I didn't really let on to what I was making and how I was making
it. Well, I can give you one tip that I figured out.
Yeah?
Especially when you have... Well, it depends on the kind of judges. If there's any professional judges, they're more of a sucker for ancho overload.
Oh, I have ancho going in there.
You better put a lot.
Really? You know, people don't know what that taste is, right? When they taste it, they're like, what is that? It tastes like plums. It tastes like...
Well, the pros know what it is.
Yeah.
And they like it.
Yeah, ancho pepper is great. If you haven't used ancho pepper... Yeah, get them dried and then rehydrate those. Like put some garlic, put them in with shrimp and then barbecue. Oh, my God.
Well, if you can get some, whatever method you want, but you have to have a lot of that ancho flavor. And it's the key to winning a chili cook-off.
All right. Well, I will tell you how it goes. It's going to be happening this Sunday. Very exciting. So inflation is out there. We got a few things to talk about in our warm-up here. By the way, we're gone for 2 weeks, and just to let you know, just to have this really put into proper perspective, I do believe that that's the reason why the market has melted down during that period of time, because we weren't there to help prop things up and save the day.
Could be.
So we're here today to say the troops have arrived. We're here. But we do have inflation, a lot of talking about, you know, oh my God, it's runaway inflation, it's going to be incredible, and 40 years, it hasn't been this bad, and oh my God, you know, the Fed's going to come in, and bonds have been moving on their own to upwards of 1.85% on the 10-year, marching towards that 2% level. We got some war talk. We got Russia is fluffing their feathers with Ukraine, and And we have the whole region's all screwed up now. North Korea's shooting off more rockets. And Biden looks awfully weak, doesn't he?
Does he? He looks sick.
Yeah, sick. But almost like the old year and a half in test of the various players, right?
Yeah, everyone wants to test us all the time.
Right.
That's why you want to have somebody that's a little... it's not bad to have a loose cannon kind of guy that you don't know what he's going to do.
I would agree.
Much more cautious.
Keep everybody on their toes. We have vaccine companies that are on the downtrend. Major rock down of those stocks recently, even though now they're talking about fourth vaccinations and annuals and all that going
fifth,
on.
By the way, it comes after four. And then six.
We're going to be announcing the winner of the 2021 Closest to the Pin Cup. We do have a winner. A big big tech. Sweat.
Does he know that he won?
Yes, he knows. I told him already. Got the cup engraved. I have to go pick it up. And the rest of the box is packed.
Oh, okay. Good.
So we have a big tech merger deal that was announced today. We're going to discuss that as well. So now in terms of the markets, you've been probably watching, John.
They've been going down.
Going down. NASDAQ is taking a beating. Worst day of 2022, which is only, 10 or 12 days
old. So yeah, not a big deal. Like a so what?
Right. Down 2.6%. 2.6% just today, the NASDAQ. Now, the value side of the equation, we've talked about this before, what that is, but as a refresher, that's the energy stocks. That's considered the... like utilities, possibly real estate related, financials doing much better than growth right now. In fact, earnings season started this week. We saw a couple of banks come in. Goldman Sachs came in today with actually decent numbers. Stock was down 10% at one point today, not helping the Dow, which finished down 500 plus points. And we're going to start seeing a few others. Wells Fargo actually came in last week, did okay, and stock went up. Citigroup, JP Morgan came out, stock did not do well. We got Bank of America and a bunch more financials this week. And next week starts the tech parade. I do think in a very perverse way, this earnings season is setting up really well to have the potential for some short squeezes in the tech area on earnings. Usually a lot of times the stocks move up into earnings, right?
Yeah.
And... you know, for a month, let's say, into earnings, they move up and they kind of crescendo upon the earnings announcement. And then they're like, not so good. It's not so much that the earnings aren't good. It was that there was too much baked in already. Well, now we have quite the opposite. And I think that's pretty interesting.
Well, I think this may be the theme for the year.
I think it's very interesting. So I talked about this on my Discipline Investor podcast for the last couple of weeks about making a watch list and looking at not just the markets, but looking at the individual names out there. Because if you look at just the markets, while the NASDAQ at one point today was down 9.8% from its high, so we're 0.2% away from
a correction,
you know, and God forbid we get into the
bear market,
you know, I mean, that's, oh my gosh. And then once we get into correction territory, you know what happens next? You get a markets in turmoil, CNBC special report, closed, you know.
Yeah.
And that's a good signal usually. It's a kind of opposite day. But this is coming into a very interesting part of, I think, where we are, where there's almost too much of a sell-off in some of the names. And I think this is going to be a very interesting setup. Doesn't mean we need to go back to the highs, but I think some of the names that are down a mere 30, 40, 50% in the last year, have an opportunity maybe to start moving
like
back.
Which ones do you have you isolated?
40, 50, 60%. All the stay-at-home plays, the Zoom medias. Look at Peloton is down, I don't know, 80% from its high. Mm. I think some of the interesting tech plays in the area of software are really starting to shine up and may have some opportunities. The charts look abysmal. They all look like this giant mountain on one side and then a rollover on the other. It's enormous. So What else do we have? Okay, international. Interesting to note that the emerging markets are beating or actually positive through today for 2022 while everything else is down. So you have to wonder if there's a bit of a reversion to the mean, something going on there. Energy. Listen to this. Energy. Do you know how much energy is up for this year? I mean,
No.
2022, I'm talking about.
Yeah.
The energy sector, the energy ETF up 16% this year.
In 2 weeks.
Yeah, 2 weeks. So that's what's going on right now. And oil is at, what, 84?
Oh, oil's out of control.
It's terrible.
And the whole energy sector is going to go nuts because, for one thing, we have a nice cold winter.
Yep.
And it's freezing out these people that, you know, follow Bernie Sanders' recommendations. So they're using wind power in New Hampshire to try to heat the houses, and that's not working out.
Not working out so well.
And I don't know what they're going to do. Everyone's going to freeze.
But weren't we supposed to see now there's a lot of talk about three digits on the oil price.
Yes. They're starting to, it may actually break 100. It wouldn't surprise me, that let's put it that way.
Does it make any sense to you?
Right. No, it doesn't make any sense that it can't be stopped from going this way. That's what doesn't make sense. It's just poor. I think it's our government that's causing a lot of this issue. And I think we're also being punished. But the gas prices in California right now for premium is $5.35 to $5.50 a gallon.
And this is all part of the inflation problem, because energy is a part of the inflation calculation.
Right. And I believe that $5.50, which is the highest in some area, I think maybe there's a couple of stations in San Francisco with $5.50 a gallon for premium. It's not that the other stuff that much cheaper, but it's probably a $4.90 for regular. Mm-hmm. But $5.50, I think it's going to break $6 within the next couple months.
But here's the question that needs to be really addressed with this. If the idea of inflation is taking off, and a big chunk of that is energy, and sometimes you segregate and separate food and energy from the core inflation, right, to kind of get that distinction.
Yeah, to try to phony up the number.
Right.
Yeah, you try to do that. Sure.
But even so, the idea that the Fed has the ability to drop down or to really fight and combat inflation, when a part of inflation is energy, they have no oversight over the cost of fuel. It's not just supply and demand in this circumstance. It's OPEC. And it's our government who screwed this whole deal up.
Yeah, it didn't take long either.
Yeah, it's not.
1 year ago today, gas prices were a dollar less.
A dollar less. And it's not like we have that much more demand. It's the supply is cut. And we always talked about this other issue about, hey, wait a minute. We have, electric cars on the road that don't use oil, petrol, right? Yep. We have a lot more efficiency in other transportation services, right?
Everything.
So how is it that there is all of a sudden this gas price at 84 when it was negative 40 2 years ago? It reminds me of the restaurants right now that are jacking up the prices.
I always forget about the negative 40.
Right? They're jacking up the prices in the restaurants to get back what they lost during the COVID days, trying to somehow punish the customers for what's going on.
Yeah. That's not going to work.
It's stupid.
It's going to make people go to the restaurant and go, I haven't been here for a while, but gee, I forgot how expensive this place is. Nah, let's cut back.
I was out to dinner the other night to call it casual dining experience. Now, mind you, the people I was with had a few drinks, but it was for four of us, $240. So cut out $60 out of that.
I've been to French restaurants in Paris, three-star places. That's minor. That's not even, you wouldn't even get to that. You'd get way beyond that.
Right, but I'm talking about a casual taco joint. That's what I want to, it's not kidding either.
Taco Bell. Holy moly.
Boy, that really is inflation.
Casual taco place. You should get out of there for about four people, any place for maybe $60 max.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's max. That's a place with drinks.
Right. And this is Florida, where there's supposed to be a lower cost of living. That didn't happen. So I want to talk about the idea we just discussed, which is inflation. Everybody's worried about inflation, and the Fed's going to come in, and they're going to just trounce it, and they're going to raise rates, and they're going to go crazy. And one of the big reasons is, well, we have increasing energy costs. We got to knock those down. And, you know, what's happening right now is it's out of control. Meanwhile, rates have gone up already. Effectively, what the Fed has done with their communication strategy, which is just talking, that's what that means, talking about stuff and goading the markets one way or the other, is to tighten financial conditions already. They haven't done a thing besides cut back on some of the bond purchases. And this is going crazy, right? So what's interesting here is that at the same time, if you look at this chart, which says latest economic reports, and it's hard to see that. You may have to blow that up somehow. But point is, if you look at a lot of these readings over the last week or so on a domestic basis, what has happened is that a lot of areas are slowing significantly. So things like business and consumer confidence, and we're seeing like retail sales down 1.9% over the month. Seeing that import prices are up dramatically, but export prices are up even more. Capacity utilization is down a bit. Industrial production is flat to down. So all these things that are going on here, we're seeing, I really do think we're starting to see more towards the end of this inflation spike. Because if you look at the underlying economics, usually the prices follow the all the other things. Does that make sense?
I don't understand completely what you said.
So what I'm saying is that if you have manufacturing that's really hot and you have demand and consumer confidence is really good, all these things lead up to a much higher level of demand, thereby increasing prices due to the fact that's how it works, right? Supply and demand. What I'm saying is we're starting to roll over on some of these things right now.
So we shouldn't be having higher prices.
Right. I think that the economics that we're seeing here are a little more leading. The prices are a little bit more lagging.
Yeah. Well, maybe that's what the Fed is thinking, too, when they're so skittish about doing anything about it.
Right. But they've been talking up the big game. And I think one of the problems, and I tweeted this morning, is that the Fed is skating to where the puck is rather than where it's going. That's what they're doing right now. They were really late in addressing the fact that they should have done something 6 months ago or longer. And now they're at the wrong time to be doing this, to be starting to really, you know, hike rates really hard.
So they're going to be, the timing's going to be off and they're going to screw it up.
Right. And it's called the Fed policy mistake. That's going to be problematic, which is showing through in the markets right now.
Huh. Interesting. Yeah. Fed policy mistake. Yeah, mm-hmm. Could be.
It's a regular occurrence, by the way. They're really bad at this. They're terrible at
this is, like I said, this is like the way the communists operate. You know, centralized control of the economy, it just doesn't seem to work out.
Right.
At least they're not telling people how many cars to make.
Yeah, now, at this point, they're telling the other things. But, all right, here's some things to ponder. NASDAQ down 9.5% or 9.8% from the November high. More than 36% of the stocks in the index are down at least 50% from their 52-week highs. 36% of the stocks are down at least 50%. That's pretty unbelievable. That's shocking. Since 1972, this is one of some of these bogus historical references and seasonality kinds of things that you hate. Since 1972, there's only been 39 days when the NASDAQ has held within 10% of its highs, while more than 35% of its members were down more than 50% of their peaks. So there's only 39 different times. And until December 2021, all of them occurred in 1998 and 1999 during the height of the internet bubble.
Yeah. The internet bubble.
So
that's our friend.
Right. We had some of those there here. I mean, we have the SPACs that didn't make money, other companies that never will make money, but they're also throwing the baby out with the bathwater and some other ones. And that is the ground zero for all of that is the ARC funds. You know, Kathy Wood?
Yeah, your old friend Kathy Wood.
Yeah, she's been trying to assure investors that, you know, hey, don't worry. Don't worry. We're in a five-year program here. We got a five-year program. There's nothing to worry about. She wrote about the idea of a 40% annual return over the last several years that she projects. Well, her fund is down 5% last week, down 18% year-to-date, 45% 1 year, 55% from its high.
Sounds like she's making some sort of mistakes.
Yeah, this is something, a couple of errors in her judgment. I mean, if she does believe that these stocks are going to quadruple in 5 years, okay, you know, just keep buying them. But what if it's all a broken clock? What if she was right in 2021 and had it all kind of put together right? But it's like an Elaine Garizella. Remember her?
Yeah. Whatever happened to her?
Yeah, exactly.
She was the hot shot.
Exactly.
She was on every show and people deferred to whatever she was thinking. And she was like strutting around like a peacock.
Mm-hmm. She was the one.
Poof.
Yeah, she was the one that called the 87 crash.
Yeah, everybody seems to have called something in the past. But that seems to me to, unless they keep doing it like more than twice.
Right.
Then so what? It's just lucky.
Some people call a crash every day.
Yeah. If you keep calling it a crash, well, I can think of two or three of them. So a lot of the gold bugs keep doing that. They've been doing it for Peter. What's his name? Has been doing it forever. Yeah,
Peter. I can see Schiff. Peter Schiff.
Yeah, Schiff.
Yep. Earnings. Goldman Sachs disappointed, as I mentioned. Stock was down about 8% on the news. We have a big week for financials. Assumptions are for a 22% growth in EPS for this quarter on a year-over-year basis. That's pretty interesting. That's what they're hoping for. And if we do that, I don't see why we shouldn't from all the numbers that are there, I mean, in totality. So again, I'm having this very odd bullish slash with a side of caution on specific areas that could really have a relief if earnings come in decent on some of this.
Well, you know, I should mention something. I think I've talked about on the show before, but I've followed the COVID thing and I've pushed it up and done the parallel look between COVID and the Spanish flu pandemic in 1908.
Yeah.
Or 1918.
Uh-huh.
17, 18, 19. Trump keeps calling it 1917. I'm not sure why. Anyway, if you look at that, the market actually became a huge bull market after the thing was declared done.
Mm-hmm. That was 2 years later.
It was 2 years after it began, yeah, which is about where we are now.
Mm-hmm.
And the market went down at first. It was almost exactly the same pattern that we saw. The market took a beating right at the beginning of it.
Yeah.
Once people dawned on everyone, this is not going to be good. And it took a beating and then started to recover and it kept recovering. And then it kind of flattened a little bit. And then when this thing was declared over, the market skyrocketed into a huge bull market. And then, of course, it eventually ended up at the 29 crash. And actually, it was a 23 crash before that. It was a panic, they called it.
Right. This is like the roaring 20s, but fast forward 100 years.
Yeah, basically. So we should have it's kind of hard to have, like you could have a roaring 20s with a kind of a senile president. It might actually make sense.
Yeah. Well, he may feel really good. He may say, feel right at home. Right at home. Oh yeah, I remember this. Hey, Margaret, get out the flapper outfit.
He just seems that old.
Yeah. But here's some things about valuations I thought was really interesting. I think is interesting where the Russell 2000, that's the small cap index, trading at 24.8 multiple, down from over 50 at the high.
Wow. That's a good sign for investors.
Right. There's something interesting there.
If you're not in.
But for the last year, the Russell 2000 has been treading water, not going anywhere. up, down, up, down, up, down, in a very narrow, relatively narrow range, you know, a few percent.
Okay.
The S&P 500 forward is 21, down from 24, so it's getting there. Interestingly, the CAPE ratio, which is it's a 10-year averaged number, so it takes a while to adjust either way, is at 39.6, which is the highest since 2000. So there's areas of the market, again, that appear to be, when we talk about the market, everybody's like, oh, what the Dow do? What the S&P 500 do? There's a lot more in this market, I think, that can be looked at as opportunistic in some of the areas that may show a change, just like the energy stocks are doing really well right now. That's what, like emerging markets are doing really well right now. Well, not really well, but comparatively, they're doing really well. So I think that's a big issue. And I think that there is the once we get past the shock of, are we going to war? Or is the Fed going to continue pounding the inflation numbers? And all the things that are happening right now with extra leverage in the markets, I think once that we flush that out, it could be at least a reasonable time to see some good opportunities.
Could be, it could be. But I think if there's a good war scare, I don't know how it would trigger, you know, some Russian incursion or something, who knows. But if there's a good war scare, that should set the market back to a nice baseline for investors to jump in.
You would think. Today, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki said, this is, how do you say it? Psaki? Psaki.
Psaki.
Yeah. And who puts two vowels? Who does that? But anyway, she said, quote, this is an extremely dangerous situation. We are now at a stage with Russia where they could, we are now at a stage where Russia could at any point launch an attack in Ukraine. And she said, it's Putin's choice whether to suffer economic consequences. Why do we have to get involved in this? Same reason as always.
Well, the reason in this case is that we're the ones who set up the Ukraine government. It's our boys. And when Victoria Nuland was over there, and they were, and Brennan, the director of the CIA, was actually roaming around in Maidan. I mean, come on. And so the Russians were a little irked about this.
What do the Russians gain from this? It's the port.
They have the main port. They got Crimea. They've taken that over. They're fine with that because that's what they needed, because they need that. They've got their boats there. The rest of it, they don't need Ukraine. It's just maybe to protect a few Russians that live there, or who knows. They have some aircraft manufacturing there and some other things that they kind of offshore a lot of their operations to Ukrainians who do a lot of the legwork for them. And maybe they're worried they're going to lose that. I don't think so, though.
But again, what is the point? What is the point with the cyber attack that was all a big hubbubaloo about this whole issue last week about the massive denial of service, shutting down Ukraine?
They're not going to give us any clues as to what's really going on.
I think that's another reason why we're seeing energy prices spike.
Yes.
That doesn't help. Point. Doesn't help. In M&A activity, Microsoft is acquiring Activision. So, as they call them, the troubled publisher of Call of Duty, World of Warcraft, and Diablo. The deal would value Activision at $68 billion. It's an all-cash deal, by the way. Far in excess of the $26 billion Microsoft paid to acquire LinkedIn, which was a good acquisition for them. So is their big push into gaming. That's the deal. It's going to create the third largest gaming company by revenue behind Tencent and Sony once the deal closes. So number one U.S.-based gaming company. And this also gives them a position in the metaverse, which is everybody's trying to get into these days.
Yeah, including you.
Yeah, it seems that way. $68 billion is $95 per share cash. Interestingly, ATVI traded today at 90-ish when the news was announced and when it was halted. It finished the day at 82. So I guess there's some antitrust issues that are worrying people.
It could be because with the Biden administration, it's possible they may actually be antitrust oriented.
But what?
They got
what
they got the complainers like?
What?
Well, you got, for one thing, they have a gaming console.
Yes.
So it's creating that kind of vertical integration that the government doesn't like to see. So you kind of control too much of the, you control the console, you control the games, you control the distribution. Too much control.
This is gaming.
I think it could be.
We're talking about gaming. We're not talking about a food source.
No, I understand that, but this is what happened to the movie industry back in the 20s and 30s when they shut, you know, the producers of movies own their own theaters. Fox and Fox is where they have Fox theaters all over the place, and they had to bust them up because there was this vertical integration that the government didn't like. It was like a monopoly. You can only play the movies made by that production company, that kind of thing.
But you could basically, there's almost a monopoly that, well, not a total monopoly, but there's they don't seem to care that Microsoft is on every computer that they operate.
There's some concern.
There's some concern. There's nothing they can do about it, I guess.
Well, they tried once and they got nowhere, and this may be an opportunity to do something about it.
Oh, it's kind of a go back in time and see what we can do to hurt these guys.
There's probably a few people with bruised egos that are in the antitrust department of the government still working there. They never quit.
They never quit.
I mean, I don't know. I mean, there's somebody's thinking this, where the stock wouldn't have dropped to 82.
Yeah, I mean, I think it sets up for a really interesting thing. There's a $3 billion breakup fee. If the deal doesn't go through, if it doesn't happen, ATVI gets $3
billion. Oh, nice.
That's a nice little piece right there. And the dude, oh, I forgot his name now, the guy that just caused all sorts of problems and why the stock dropped so much recently because of the corporate culture there. And it was bad. Bad situation.
The Activision corporate culture.
Yeah, there was a whole, really.
I don't know anything about this.
Oh,
this
there's a lot going on with the CEO. And anyway, he has to step down after this deal happens. So he'll get his payout. Thank you very much. Which is probably a great deal if you think about it. If he was approached or if they set up the approach, he knows he was in trouble. There's all sorts of stuff that is just, you know, out there creeping up on him.
Like probably what? Call of Duty was a cash cow.
No. I'm talking, 1 second. Activision CEO. I'm telling you, he's a bad guy or something bad here. Yeah, Activision CEO, Bobby Kotick. Near billionaire Bobby Kotick is about to leave the company once the $68 billion closes. There's all sorts of news here. There was a bad corporate culture, sexual harassment.
Gee, can't imagine.
All sorts of weird stuff. So,
a bunch of nerdy game designers and their sexual harassment, huh?
Yeah. Sexual misconduct.
Write this down. It's far hard to believe.
The problem was he knew about sexual misconduct allegations at the video game company.
I'm sure he did.
So this is a big problem. He has to step down.
Huge problem. Well, what are you going to do?
Yeah. China. You know, they have a zero COVID policy.
Yeah.
But somehow they want to have the Olympics there.
I know. It's unbelievable.
How is that going to work?
Well, it's not going to work well. And any athlete that goes there, according to at least the U.S. Hockey team, they won't go. They bailed out because they can't take a chance on the Chinese rules that if you get COVID over there, you're stuck. You're stuck there for 14 days in quarantine. And if you're a professional hockey player, you got to come back and play some hockey. You can't be stuck in China for 2 weeks. So none of them went. They said, we're not taking a chance on this. One guy gets COVID. We all get COVID. Next thing you know, we're hurting our home teams. You know, we're doing this as a favor to the government. You know, it's not that important.
It seems absurd to me that we're having the Olympics in China when ports are closing, cities are being shut down, a supply chain problem part two, maybe right before our very eyes.
Yeah, they're going to shut down a bunch of stuff just to make our lives miserable.
It's unbelievable.
Under the guise of COVID. I'm not buying any of it.
So this is just what? A master plan to create a the ultimate environment for people to
count. Supply and demand dilemma.
Oh. So you're saying that they are artificially creating this nonsense to stick it to us.
Well, they need more money. They, you know, their price, you know, we are relying on them for parts, for whole product. I mean, you go to places like Joann's or any of these Hobby Lobbies or any of these places, it's all Chinese stuff. Everything comes from China. The ribbon comes from China. The little bird houses come from China. The scissors come from China. The thread comes. Everything comes from China. The whole place is filled with Chinese products.
This is nothing new.
No, it's nothing new, but they would like a little more money. It comes over here dirt cheap. It's marked up a lot. And, you know, the markup's got a lot of room underneath it. The Chinese want more money. So I think they're sick of these dumping this stuff on the market, because nowadays it's good quality for the most part.
Yeah.
But it's a good quality product and they're selling it for dirt cheap. Nah, that has to end.
There was a made in Japan era.
Oh, yeah.
You remember that, right? How did that end?
Yeah, and
did that
end? Then all of a sudden the Japanese is the premium.
Yeah.
Remember that?
Right. Right.
That's what we have today with a Lexus. So, a Lexus car is better than any American car.
How did that end, that whole period? Why did it end? Is it China that came in?
I remember in the 60s, there was like a song called Made in Japan, and they were derided for junk products like the Chinese are for Made in Japan. It was Made in Japan. Oh, it says Made in Japan. And then all of a sudden, at some point, the fact that the Japanese were precision engineers and could make a high quality product and always did, I think it ended with the Toyota.
Hmm. Yeah, there was some crazy stuff that went on. Maybe there's going to be another transition and a turnaround from the Made in China. I mean, we can't seem to get any legs under Made in the USA because the stuff is so expensive here. That's a big problem also.
And there's also quality issues.
Yeah.
We've always had quality issues.
Right.
We have good quality control in general, but you pull a little bit away from QC, and the next thing you know, the product goes down the tubes. It's right. Like a real issue unless you're really doing the QC job. Now, having been an inspector, I can say that.
Right. You were an inspector general. More in China. China's central bank on Monday cut the borrowing cost of its medium-term loans for the first time since April 2020, which is really interesting. And the People's Bank of China, the PBOC, said it was lowering the interest rate on 700 billion won, which is about $110 billion worth of one-year medium-term lending facility loans to some financial institutions by 10 basis points from 2.95 to 2.8. So most analysts had predicted no change. So you have to think about, is China worried about something? Or are they getting ahead? Because that's going against what most others are doing.
That's a good question.
Now, meanwhile, China's had some pretty good growth. The economy rebounded in 2021 with its best growth in a decade. We know that, which was helped by robust exports. But there are a lot of signs right now that the momentum is starting to slow. Growth in the fourth quarter hit a 1.5-year low, which is the government's data. So that's what they put out.
We don't know.
We don't know if it's right or not, but it is slowing, so it could be even worse.
Better.
Yeah, who knows?
They could be sandbagging us. You don't know.
Right. They may not even be actually getting any data at all that is putting out information. Right.
They may just be phoning up the data.
Yeah, it's like, what do you guys want to do? What should we do? Well, it'd be really nice if we could reduce rates somehow. So why don't we throw out some numbers that look a little bit concerning? This is the first rate cut since early 2020. Now, the other problem you have is the property sector in China is still cooling. Big problems with many companies. So that could be the reason why they're trying to prop up the banks a bit.
Well, they got to do something. I think the situation with the property, and you've been to a ghost city. I've always wanted to go. I think they have huge issues with their real estate.
They do. And as you got to think about, while some cities they're locking down have multi-millions of people, so it's not like a small little area, but still, you're locking down an entire county or area or region or sector, that's got to do some damage to the general economy, right?
I would hope so.
You would think. I mean, I don't understand how you can have the same.
These segments of this of their society, those cities that they're locking down when they lock one down, they're locking down 50. They're locking down the size of Mexico City, the small cities that we're talking about.
Right.
Small.
Right.
15 million people.
Right. Exactly. So I don't know how they would in fact get out of this. And the other thing is that if Omicron is the way out of this, you know, that whole discussion, right? You know, if.
We're big proponents of it on the No Agenda show.
Right. So if somehow this is the way out of COVID, that pretty much everybody gets it. That's the whole theory. And we get that herd immunity finally. Then you have to wonder, how does China get out of it? If they have lockdowns.
If they're not going to go in that direction.
Right.
No, if they keep up this idea of zero tolerance, it's going to be a serious problem. That's going to cause the economy to collapse. They can't do it.
Right, because if you have 7...
They shut down a city with 25 cases.
If you have 25 cases and you shut down a 25 million person city, that seems a little bit absurd. I understand what they're trying to do from what they say they're trying to do, but it seems a little absurd. And that's going to restrict... That's going to have a ripple effect on the global economy as the second largest economy in the world for years to come if they keep doing this. Which I guess is what you're saying, is that they may do that. They may just keep on doing that. On purpose. In EV news, we have some EV news. We can't not have any EV news. Electric vehicles will soon have bi-directional or two-way batteries that can turn cars into useful sources of power for your home, your work site, or even another car. Well, that's pretty smart, right?
Yeah, sure.
So the other news is that oil giant BP, British Petroleum, claims the use of its BP Pulse electric vehicle chargers is on the cusp of being more profitable for the company than filling up an internal combustion powered car with gas. And once that happens, it could be a major turning point in EVs and big oil, which is really fascinating. What they're going to do is kill the golden goose, right? If the idea that it was cheaper to utilize electric and it was theoretically and believed to be cleaner, these guys are going to come in. You know what they're going to do? They're going to shit it all up, right? They're going to do it for profitability. It's going to cost you the same or more or even higher price than it was before. You know how this works.
That's what you do.
Yeah. What you do. We have the tale of two price hikes, really kind of fascinating discussion of the power of and ability of companies to increase prices. The first one is Peloton, you know, that bicycle company.
Yeah. Yeah.
They're going to be charging customers more for this original bike and the tread products, citing rising inflation and heightened supply chain costs.
Uh huh.
So on beginning on January 31st, the end of this month, the company will be asking customers to pay an additional $250 for delivery and setup. So by the way, quick question. Help me out with this. They are increasing the price due to inflation and heightened supply chain costs, right? Got that?
I heard that, yeah.
And now they're going to be asking customers to pay an additional $250 for delivery and setup. So how do higher supply chain costs require you to charge more for delivery or setup?
I don't know. It sounds like a bogus excuse for charging you more money.
Right.
Some bean counter came and said, you know, these delivery costs are killing us.
Yeah. Previously, Peloton said that the $250 and $350 fees for delivery and assembly were included in the total price of the bike. So there's a brand new extra cost involved in it. Now,
so what does the bike sell for?
$1,745 for the baseline.
So they essentially went from $1,745 for the bike, and the delivery is now extra, which adds really just you add it to the price. It makes it the bike.
Actually, I think it was $1,500. Now it's $1,750. That's what it is. It was $1,500 before. Now it's $1,750.
Well, that's a pretty reasonably high hike.
Yeah. Now here's the next point, because this is an interesting way to look at things. Over the weekend, or maybe it was last Friday, Netflix came out, said they're raising its monthly subscription price by $1 to $2 per month in the United States, depending on which plan you have. And it's going to help pay for new programming to compete with the crowded streaming TV market. The standard plan, which allows for two simultaneous streams, costs now $15.49 per month, up from $13.99 in the United States. Okay, so here's what's interesting. That's easy. Netflix has pricing power. They do something that's has a very little impact on each individual person, but when you spread it across the swath of all their user base, that's a lot of money
And it's also, you have to consider the fact that it's spread across the families.
There's a lot of ways to disperse this cost, right?
Sharing. It's shared.
So look at the two different ones. Peloton does the stupid move to kill their own business with this kind of hike. Basically, they could.
Peloton should, with this situation occurring and the Omicron coming out and all the rest of where we might start going back to work, which many people have done, Peloton should lower their prices.
They should lower their price. This is the old razor.
By the way,
blade.
They sell so many bikes. Don't you make a lot? You get to make them cheaper.
And then, but the other thing is, the big issue, which everybody loved about this, was they also have a subscription product. Because now when you get your bike, you can ride all day long. But if you want to be a part of the classes and all the good stuff in the community and all the people saying, yeah, John, keep on riding. And the badges and all the stuff that you get, you have to buy the subscription.
You got a badge.
Yeah, right. You have to buy the subscription from them for $49 a month, we'll call it. Now, I don't know. It would have seemed to me that
they
should have increased the cost of the subscription and sucked you into buying the bike.
Cheaper. Yeah, it should be like the razor blade model. Who are they kidding?
Exactly. But what they did was prevented people from buying the actual razor themselves.
To entry.
How stupid is this?
You can't be any dumber.
Bad management. Just stupid. So they're now working with McKinsey to review its cost structure now, all of a sudden, and potentially eliminate jobs and permanently close some stores and really, really bad. Stupid people.
That sounds like a short.
Yeah. And that's down like 80%. Bourbon. We have a worry, concern, an alert about bourbon. After conducting a study to find how quickly American white oaks could decline, scientists found that the change would begin in the next 10 years, and 75% of the white oaks of the 100 million acres in the U.S. forests are already mature. Furthermore, the study found that 60% of the land had no white oak seedlings. This is a big problem because now you need these barrels.
We're going to have a gap. We're going to have a barrel gap.
You have a barrel gap, and you could only use white oak to make true bourbon.
Yeah, it's true.
So there's a problem.
But you can always make, you know, you call it Kentucky whiskey or American whiskey. There's a million ways of getting it right. Yes, bourbon per se.
A blend.
There's bourbon per se. And besides that, and the interesting little side bit to this is that one of the more popular spirits is becoming rye, which is kind of a progenitor of bourbon. It's like a
corn.
It's like a corn versus wheat. Bourbon.
Right?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And I will share with you that if you have the opportunity, if you want to taste something that is fantastic, even if you're not a connoisseur of bourbons and whiskeys, there is an Angel's Envy rye, about $80 a bottle. When you taste it, if you don't taste butterscotch on the back end and caramel, it's an unbelievable bottle. Angel's Envy Rye. Yep.
I'll look for it.
So, but I wonder.
Maybe if we get more donations to the show, I can try
it. Good point. Yeah, we could do that. If we get enough donations this week, if you put in the note whiskey and we add up to enough two bottles, we will taste it on the show.
And discuss.
Right?
Yeah, why not?
So that's, we should be able to do $160. But yeah, so if you want to donate to the show, go over to the site. Click on the button. In the notes area, put whiskey or rye. Put rye. Rye is easy. R-Y-E. Put rye. And we'll get enough. We'll buy a couple of bottles. And we will taste
it. Toast to the audience.
Yeah, exactly. On one of the shows coming up. I always have to remember to do that. I was wondering, though, this whole thing, is this just maybe a scam, this whole white oak thing, to get bourbon price up higher so people will start going and say, oh, man, I better get bottles now before they go up in price and there's no longer any product out there?
Well, since you have to age bourbon, it's pretty much not to an extreme that you do with some of the brandies in France, but you do have to age it at least 3 or 4 years and then maybe 10 or 12.
Yeah.
I don't see what the rush is.
Yeah.
Well, and you can use used barrels. Did they have to be new charred oak? Can you use the old barrel to make bourbon?
I think it's one and done. I happened to be out to dinner last night with an owner of a distillery.
I should know this.
Yeah, it's one and done.
Okay. What was the dinner like? What happened?
I was just some people we know. He just happens to own his distillery, and we were talking about this last night.
Talking about that, or are you talking about truffle butter?
That I was talking about as well. Yes. So the other thing that's going on right now is whiskey scams, where empty bottles are selling for hundreds of dollars on sites like eBay and what.
Oh, so people, you know, yes. I've thought about this as an interesting business. I always thought that I always drink kind of a. I don't drink the highest, a high end Bordeaux, but I drink medium Bordeaux that are kind of, you know, not cheap necessarily. But I always thought you go around, find people that in certain parts of the country that drink a lot of Lafitte or Latour, and just tell them to put their bottles in a box and sell a box of these bottles to people.
Yeah.
And so you can refill the bottles with some swill. You look at this, have another glass of Lafitte. Mm-hmm. I mean, that kind of thing. People do that in bars. I mean, they have inspectors come around. A lot of people don't realize this, but it's either the health department or some group of people. I think it's the health department. And they take samples of all the booze in the bar. They don't do it all the time, but they do it once in a while. And they do a spectrographic analysis, and they can tell if that's the booze it's supposed to be. A lot of people don't realize that is done.
Yeah, and this is going on with like Pappy Van Winkle or Offits or Macallan. Oh,
Pappy Van Winkle, which cost $200+ a bottle.
$2,000.
Oh, is it up to? Oh, yeah, well, whatever it is, too expensive for me.
At least.
But it's high end, and it's like you get that, and you just put some other, and no one's going to, half the people that drink that won't know the difference.
Right, exactly. The only thing you have to do is properly close it again so it doesn't look like it was ever opened. Somehow
that'd be ideal.
Yeah, you get some kind of print of that label that goes over the top. Yep, exactly. Quick crypto segment sent in by Dave Ackman. We got the 13th anniversary of the first transaction ever recorded on the Bitcoin network, which was on the 13th of January when they put the Genesis block message on there. That's pretty exciting, I guess. Began a year with the highest level of security ever as the hash rate soared to a record of 203 exahashes per second, which means electricity is up really significantly as well. And the other thing that's interesting is Ozzy Osbourne has created a collection of 9,666 NFT crypto bats with a unique feature when it's activated, will allow it to bite and mutate with another NFT in the wallet, combining the attributes of the two items.
I don't want to hear about this.
You don't want to?
I'm already confused.
Yeah, Ozzy Osbourne, I was at the concert where he bit the head off the... Well, there's two concerts. One year he hung the midget, and the other year he bit the head off the bat. I was at both of those. My right ear still is tingling a little bit from it.
Yeah, you got to wear ear protection.
Oh, that was a rough concert. Oh, man. Ozzy Osbourne. Listen, we're going to announce the winner of the DH Unplugged Close to the Pin Cup for 2021. We had five different people that did participate: Tim, Brian, Rick, Keith, Ian, and Gary. And this is for all the marbles for the year. And the Close to the Pin was Tim D. He came in 0.51%, 0.5%, which is a wide margin. But there's a lot of volatility at the end of the year. He came in 185 points from the final price of the Dow Jones Industrial Average, was 36,338 or so. And the next runner-up is Brian. He was 2% off or 700 points off. And Rick was 800. Keith was 900. Ian was 1,400. And Gary was 2,000 points off. He was thinking there's going to be a real stinky move at the back end there.
Well, he's was ahead of his time.
Yeah, he was 2 weeks too early, maybe. That's all. So congratulations. We have a trophy coming, a really cool trophy, and we'll send it to you. Take a picture when you get it and send it over to us. This is a game that we play. It's not a solicitation. Wait, what? Hello, what?
I was going to say, the guys who do these, get involved in these contests are remarkably talented.
Yeah. They got so, these are the guys and gals who came close, incredibly close to what, you know, the pricing that we see each and every week when we, or every few weeks when we do it. And these are the cream of the crop.
Yeah.
Pretty cool. All right, going back to the disclaimer. This is a game that we play. It's not a solicitation to buy or sell any security. It's not a recommendation of any kind. Nothing on the show should be considered investment advice or a recommendation. If you choose to invest in any of the stocks mentioned, you should know that it may carry risk, along with the risk of a loss of principal. You should also seek out professional financial advice for your particular situation. We assume no risk, as these are not to be considered recommendations. Horowitz Company, myself, or John C. Dvorak may invest in any of the securities mentioned, and we'll disclose that on the website under the weekly stock picks section. You can go to dhunplugged.com and see all the names we discuss in the segment, along with the performance information from the date discussed, as well as any additional important disclosures. So interestingly enough, with all this that's going on and the market's moving from left to right, up and down, sideways, you still have the wiener with FVC Bank Corp, which still has not dropped off, up 101%. It was even up today. Banks are getting skewered today. Somehow magically, FVC Bank Corp is doing great, up 1% today.
Yeah, that was a winner.
That was a winner, winner chicken dinner.
So this is our opportunity, our one-time opportunity to get rid of some stuff that we have on here that it's either dead money or it's, but it looks like most of it got rid of itself.
Yeah. Self-exhausted.
Self-washed.
Yeah, exactly. Asana got kicked off. That was down 11.5% today. These cloud companies that have even some that have really good outlooks, they're just getting sold mercilessly.
Yeah, yeah. It might go down some more too, but it's going to be a good buy.
Yeah, $766. Your insights up 1.79% from last week. Twitter got kicked. Vuzix got kicked. FedEx is still kind of plugging along, up 6.5%. Your NVIDIA, which is inside, is up 48%. What else stands out here? UPS. So I picked UPS and FedEx. So both those are doing pretty well. Honeywell's up 21%. Medtronic just will not leave. Just won't leave. We're almost coming up on 2 years on Medtronic.
It'll be a two-year anniversary on the 18th of January, March.
Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable.
With all the crap going on, I'm going to wait one more week, but I think I have a couple of special things coming out next week. You have anything for this week?
I'm going to go long on something.
What do you got?
Even though I could probably start looking for shorts, I think it might be a good little period for shorting. But ULH, this is an insider's buy. And it's one of the directors. And I will say that he trades. And you can tell by looking at his insider's log. And his trades are, he doesn't trade that much, but he does buy and sell. And it appears as if he doesn't make mistakes.
Oh.
And this guy is Matthew.
One of those guys.
Maroon or something like that. And he has picked up $46 million of this company.
Wow.
And he's been accumulating. And he did do a sell of it some time ago, and he sold it at a little peak, and he made out on it.
Wow.
So I have to say he might be onto something. I think it's one of these guys that's
that knows.
He's got something going on. And he's also a director of the company, buying it like crazy. And I'm always reminded of Steve Ballmer.
Ah, gotcha. ULH, it's Universal Logistics Holdings. Well, we're out of time, kids. It's time to say goodbye.
All right. We'll be talking again next Tuesday.
We shall be. We're going to keep the schedule going. Rolling along. See you then.
Bye.
You've been listening in on a conversation with John C. Dvorak and Andrew Horowitz. Hope to be with you again soon. Bye-bye.
Now, I'm not broke, but badly bent. I'm not down to my last cent, because I got a dollar, but it's my last dollar bill. Yes, sir. In my pockets, there's a dent. All my dough is nearly spent, but I got a dollar, and it's my last dollar bill. Oh, I'd love just one more buck fortune left me by chance. Now, here's a hint, I feel like a man. You can hardly tell by a glance. I don't care, no millionaire can give me the icy stare, because I got a dollar, my last dollar bill.
Horowitz & Company, Inc. is registered as an investment advisor with the state of Florida and conducts business in other states where it is properly registered or is excluded from registration requirements. Registration does not imply any level of skill or training.